So that we put these talks onto MP3 files on the website. And so that's why I just turned it on. We don't need to record all the stuff about upcoming events for this. So, it's my great pleasure to welcome back our dear friend, Kenny Johnson, who's been here at least twice before.
More than that,
I think. Three times before. And he has been an inspiration each time in the past, and I look forward to another evening in that vein as well tonight. So welcome back, Kenny. Thank you.
I hope we all live to be 103 years old, just kicking and having a great time with this thing called life. Good to see everybody. You're welcome.
I'm just going to lie down. Don't.
No, no problem, no problem. Lay down, go to sleep. Mm-hmm.
My heart's beating.
Yes. It's good to see everybody. I never know what I'm going to say until I get here. And then whatever needs to be said just comes out. And let me know if you can't hear me and I'll talk louder. Okay? When I was in prison, I just wanted to be free. But I didn't know what that meant. I just wanted to be free of prison. But as I look back on it, I was so messed up. I was so sick, I was so wounded, I was so dysfunctional. In order for me to be free of prison, something radical had to happen. There was no way I was going to be able to come out of prison in the same state of mind I went in and come back out and stay out. It was impossible. Something had to happen. Something had to happen. Welcome. How you doing? Come on in, have a seat. And so, the universe, Mother God, Father God, in its esteemed wisdom, had to position me in a certain place, in a certain prison, in order for me to get this dream that I was asking for, to get this prayer that I was asking for, to receive this blessing that I was asking for, freedom. So I was placed in federal prison in Littleton, Colorado. And up until when I got there, I had served approximately about 19 years or so in different prisons. And once I got there, I was so angry, upset, because I went back to drinking, and I was drying out, as they say. And so once I dried out enough, and I realized, okay, now what am I going to do since I'm dry? What am I going to do to do my bit? I had 32 months to do in federal prison. How am I going to do this time? So all the other times I got into yoga, meditation, and all those other types of groups, so I just went back to what I knew best, you know, yoga and meditation. So I got with some group guys, small group of guys, and we started watching videos every Monday night or Tuesday night or Wednesday night. And it was in one of these videos where I saw this woman, this white-haired woman. And I instantly recognized her from a dream I had years and years ago. This woman I saw on a video was supposed to give me my freedom. Again, I still didn't know what freedom was all about, real freedom. I had no idea. I just knew that in a dream I was going to meet this woman, I was going to have an awakening. I didn't know what that was about. And so A year later, she comes to prison. I meet her. We have a conversation as we're having here. I asked her one question. I asked her, I said, Gangaji, is my understanding that as a Christian, we have to die before we can receive God's grace? And so my understanding of death was like a physical death. Then go somewhere and then be judged by this almighty, all-wise being somewhere in another galaxy, a constellation or planet. And she looked at me and she says, Kenny, God's grace is here now. And that shifted my whole being right there on the spot. I shifted. I relaxed, took a breath, and instantly in this silence and this quietness, there came up fear. But how am I going to take care of myself? All I know is how to rob and steal. All I know is crime. I'm a criminal. That's all I know. How am I going to survive out there when all I know how to do is rob? And I realized I couldn't be a criminal anymore. So how in the heck am I going to survive out there? But that thought passed also. Then I fell back into this grace, this peace, this relaxation, which I had never in my life done before. I had never relaxed. I was always driven to achieve, to get. In this relaxation that night, I was able to see for the first time in another human being love. I was for the first time able to look in the skies and the stars and to see beauty. The first time in my life I ever saw another human being and saw this human being was the same myself, and this human being was love. I was able to finally look at the stars, which I've been looking at for some 40-some years, and see beauty in the stars. I had never seen beauty in the stars, like, oh, it's a bunch of lights up there. That's it. My beauty was in a bar. My beauty was in a dollar bill. My beauty was in a pair of shoes. My beauty was in a three-piece suit. My beauty was in however many banks I could rob, checks I could cash. That's my beauty. That was my way of gauging myself or staying connected to what I thought was beauty, was real. Then that night, I went and laid down in my bed, in my bunk. I closed my eyes to go to sleep. And I was in this space of not of half awake and half asleep, and just watching my thoughts go and 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 go. And I could not grab one thought. It was like a rushing river. And then on top of that, there was a sound. It was a humming sound, like a high-pitched tape recorder erasing something. Now I understand it means the primordial sound on, because it and it went on all night long. When I woke up the next morning, all I wanted to do was go somewhere and just be quiet. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to kick it. I didn't want to do nothing but just be quiet. And so all the other friends that I had been hanging out with, walking the yard, talking about what we're going to do, how we're going to cash checks and all that kind of stuff, they saw me sitting over there by myself and said, what's going on, man? I said, I want to tell you about somebody I just met the other night. And I tried to share with him my spiritual experience, and he immediately backed away. I was not offended. I was not hurt. I was cool. I was not angry at him. I just knew intuitively, or instinctively, or intuitively that this guy had a lot invested in his life, the way I had the day before. Only I divested myself of that investment. Invested myself in this another, deeper world. Consciousness, awareness. All I knew then was just, I just wanted to be alone. That's all I wanted to do, was be alone. and just be quiet and just let my mind finally, for once, rest without a hustle, without a con. I was listening to a gentleman today. He said that the masters long ago never dreamed. I thought about that. And I talked to a few other wise men. They said, once you achieve this state, there's no dreaming. So I thought about that. If there's no dreaming, there's just being. Just being. Because there's no need for planning, there's no need for scheming, there's no need for anything, just being. There's not a undercurrent of talking going on when you're walking down the street, when you're having a cup of coffee, or when you're driving down the street. There's no undercurrent thought. There's no investing these ideas or thoughts into the subconscious and into your subconscious or the unconscious. Because when you're doing that, then the unconscious, when you're asleep, then you have to have these dreams or the spiritual experience to realize this is where you are psychologically. So, even though I've been out of prison since 1997 and my spiritual awakening happened in 1994, there's a lot of work that I'm doing right now because I have a whole bunch of dreams. Because there's a lot of self-talk going on. How can I hold a job? How can I get a new car? How can I do this? How can I do that? Who can I talk to? Who can I, you know, all this here. And so that causes some type of suffering. Some type of pain. So your unconscious, so the mother or God, in her wisdom, speaks to you at night while you're asleep and saying, my son, my daughter, this is where you are psychologically. And I want you to be with me. So this dream that you had about whatever it is needs to be addressed by meditating, by doing yoga, by whatever it takes to become still and quiet and have no thoughts. And so in prison for almost 2 years, I was in this place of no thought. No nothing. No wanting, no attachment. Just place of really no thinking. Just actually being. And so many men and women, so many men in prison were able to taste this. And they had a shift. So the state of no thought comes and goes on its own. But it's moments like this where we can go deeper into that place of no thinking. This is why I'm grateful to be able to be a part of such wonderful meetings as this. Just for a moment, we'll get a chance to drop our thinking, drop our planning, drop our scheming, just for a moment, and just taste this place of emptiness, spaciousness. And so what I would like to do now is open the floor for any questions, any comments, any reports. Yes.
Do you find it challenging to stay in your space of silence or no thoughts for 2 years with your environment?
No, it was really, what happened was prison became paradise for me. Mm-hmm. After I had that experience, it became paradise. It really was. It only became hell to me was once I knew that I was going home, and about 90 days before going home, my mind kicked in, oh shit, how in the hell am I going to survive out there? What am I going to do? How am I going to make it? I would say, in prison, we used to listen to videos of Gandhiji, and she had these talks with all these people, hundreds of people, and these people would ask all these silly questions, like, oh, my husband just left me, and I'm just devastated, and, you know, I just lost my car, and, you know, and we would look at that, why are they worried about that stuff? You can get another car, you can get another husband. Because we were in we was at the bottom of the barrel, you know. And so, here I am now, I'm out here. Now I'm like, oh, a landlord might have us move out next month. Oh, how are we going to get a deposit to do this? How are we going to do that? Oh, my car just broke down. Oh, man, God. And so I was writing one of my prison friends, I was corresponding with a prison guy about 2 months ago, and I was telling him what's going on with my life. He says, I would give my right hand to be in your position. Mm-hmm. And then immediately came back home. Oh, that's right. He's doing 20 years. He's not getting out in by another 17 years. He would love to have my problems. He would love to have any of y'all's problems. Whatever they may be. He was to give them to me. All at once.
But can I have
this? Mm-hmm, sure.
Madam, don't you feel that those are legitimate concerns, you know, like where you're going to live, why are you going to get a car and stuff like that?
It's all relevant.
It's relevant. It isn't like you can just go out and have no thoughts and kind of find this stuff. I mean, unless you're leading something.
Well, I beg to differ.
Really?
I'm going to say this, just my own spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. Once I had the awakening experience, I got out, and I didn't know how to hold a job down. I didn't know how to have relationships. I didn't know how to do anything. And by some miraculous way, this grace has been just taking care of me, educating me, and teaching me.
So you stay in tune with that state of mind and then stuff.
As much as possible. Yeah. Then there's times I'm totally not in tune with it. But it's in tune with me at all times. See, that's the key. It's always in tune with me and you. Mm-hmm. It is never out of tune with you. Even though you might be playing F sharp, it's still playing D minor.
Like I said, if God seems far away, who moved?
That's right. You moved. Mm-hmm. You moved. God never moves. So, what I am seeing, and what I'm learning, my spiritual experience is teaching me, the more I can stay empty, the more the universe can take care of me, and then I can be into this place of wisdom. We forget about wisdom. We forget about wisdom. The more emptier you are, then the more you're able to really tap into this true place of guidance and support and love. And that takes care of you. The more thoughts you have, the more it has to circumvent all this little crazy stuff that you're thinking in order to get a message to you. So the less thoughts we have, the easier it is to communicate to our divine presence. So how do you support yourself spiritually? What do you do?
I do?
Yeah. I mean, you I mean, what do you do? What do you do? You, when you wake up in the morning, how's your day for us? Do you take a moment to just... Okay.
That's my husband. Yeah, he tried.
Okay. So you have some type of practice throughout the day.
And the day gets hard every other half hour right now is what's happening. So I have to, in order to not sink, I'm having to keep looking for that place more than I ever have because my husband is sick.
Mm.
And I keep coming up against that fear and loss, struggle and aversion. Like, God, you know, why couldn't he just get well, you know? I mean, all kinds of stuff. I never dreamed I would be thinking. And then, so I'm just trying to, find that place where I can be there.
Never stop trying, then. Never stop trying. Never stop. Don't give up. I always use my spiritual experience to confirm other people, to say that if I never gave up on this freedom. All I want was freedom. I never gave up on it. So never give up on wanting to find this place of equanimity, of emptiness, of spirit. Never give up. Then one day you're going to say, forget it. Then boom, there it is. And losing a loved one, I have not yet lost a loved one that was close to me from this conscious place. And I imagine that it would be devastating to me. Because once you have the awakening, you become more sensitive or more attuned to the suffering and to your own suffering and your own pain. And your own attachment. And to your own wanting things to be your way, or the things to be the way you think they should be.
And that's hard to let go of.
Yes, of course. Of course. And so your experience, whatever other human experiences, when they are attached to another human being and they want that person to get well. I am not negating it. I am not saying, let it go. I'm not saying anything.
I know.
I'm just saying, I feel what you feel. Because I am attuning myself to your heart. It's only one heart anyway. So I feel your heart, and I feel what you're going through, and I understand.
It's funny, it's easier when the spring comes, because part of what I realized, this winter was a hard winter for me, and I realized how much I was attached to growing plants, you know, like I felt like maybe like the Lakshmi, you know, the Hindu, I mean, like, no flowers, you know, where do they go? I mean, I really, you know, now they're coming back, and so I don't want to be dependent on that, but I'm realizing how much I am.
Whatever it takes for you to fan the flames of love.
Yeah.
Yes, whatever it takes.
But still, I can't depend on there always being flowers.
But right now, flowers are where you are.
And my cats.
And your cats.
And one of them's real sick.
And one of them's real
sick. It's just a bitch, you know? It's just a bitch.
Yes, yes.
Oh, man. Awesome. But I no longer feel like that means I'm making a mistake. See, I used to think if something like that was happening, well, I must be doing something wrong. I'm not working the program right.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And now I'm knowing, well, that's also true about our life. I mean, there's the heart and all that, mm-hmm. but also life is loss and suffering and mm-hmm. loss. And
right.
If you're holding on.
Yeah.
Holding on is what I know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. taking care of,
mm-hmm.
watering,
mm-hmm.
feeding,
mm-hmm.
you know, so then you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to keep talking.
No, please. And as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, spirit came here, spirit embodied, incarnated itself in these bodies to feel. All of life to the core, because spirit knows that no matter what, I'm okay.
Oh, right. So spirit's here to feel this stuff.
Yeah. And through us.
Doing a good job through me.
Yeah, me too. Yes.
I noticed the sense of peace and calm when I walked in, and I was glad to be here. And I was wondering, this, you were able to receive this gift through her,
mm-hmm.
from her. Would you say? I was just wondering about genetics and like we inherit certain qualities from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that your piece is flavored by hers or?
Yes. My teacher, she was able to transmit what was in her heart, what she received from her teacher. But Robin had received from the universe. And so, yes, this experience that Robin had passed through Papaji, through Gangaji to me, and it was not depleted or added to one iota. It remained pure all the way down.
The question is, it's a general question.
Yes.
How does the teacher, or the spirit of the teacher, or the spirit that the teacher carries, how is it transmitted, and how does it live in the student or the disciple, and maybe like a seed, and then it grows and into it.
You say, how is it transmitted?
How is it transmitted, and how does it live in the student?
Have you received any type? Do you have a teacher?
Well, I like saying that as long as I'm learning, then everything is my teacher.
So you're receiving the transmission
all the time. Yeah.
So it's not from any specific place, or it can't be from one specific place.
It's kind of like a mystery.
Thank you. I am not going to step off into that world, that water, and try to explain it, because that is not my forte. That is not my gift. My gift is simply to be, and I really am not able. I'm not taught in the mysteries. I can only speak for my actual spiritual experience and whatever wisdom that comes through that, as to how certain things happen, why they happen. I didn't go to any of those schools of thought. I was not trained by anyone. I simply read some books, had an awakening experience, and I'm trying to live it the best as I possibly can.
So you go to that awakened experience.
As much as I possibly can.
Yeah. And that's like the seed of everything that you become since.
Right. Yeah. What I say is this, as I, throughout my day, whenever I'm reminded to stop, I stop, take some deep breaths, and feel the energy of this awakening, of letting go. And it's remained there as long as I can. That's my basic practice. Of I go meditate, I sit and listen to the teachers teach. But throughout my day, I just simply stop, take a few breaths, then feel the energy that comes up out of that. Yes.
I had this experience recently of waking up several times in the night where I'd never seen the dance so clearly between like the ego and being, where I woke up just in being, and then my mind was like, uh-oh. I didn't know who I was. I didn't remember my story.
Mm-hmm.
And my mind, and I was, and that was, you know, euphoria.
Right.
But my mind was like,
nah.
This is not okay.
No, I'm something. Yeah.
I don't have my jacket. I don't know my story.
Right.
And
right.
Then, like, reaching and getting that, putting that onto like this heavy jacket.
That's
and
right.
It,
that's
it
right.
Felt like really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel it so clearly and right. See how, oh my God, this is all just a story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of like would let go of it. I fall asleep, and I woke up like several times that night with the same thing happening, and I was just laughing because it was so funny. It was so clear to me.
Yeah.
It was the ego grasping this whole story,
which is so
transparent.
Right, because you need, I don't say you need, but there's a driver, and that driver is, I am this, I am that, I have this, I do this, I do this, I do this, I do this.
Yeah.
That's driving this.
Yeah, the story.
The story. Yeah.
So clearly just the story.
That's the story. And that's why you only confirmed just now that the masters, they don't have, there's no story running. So there's no dream running.
Being was so blissful. Just the state of being.
Just the state of
where
being.
Where the bliss was.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
And the story is so afraid. There's such fear.
Right.
And thinks that that's going to give you happiness. Whatever you're driving towards, right? But it was just so laughable because it became so clear in this kind of a dance where they were both so played out.
Right.
Like I've experienced just being just bliss before, but I hadn't experienced that dance or seeing
right.
It so clear.
You're able just to step, wow, look at this. It, this wow.
No, that you know, there's no choice. It's
right.
So obvious where the happiness is.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Chris, do you think experiencing prison has helped your spiritual life?
If I had not experienced consciousness at the stage and the age that I was at that time, I would be either dead or in prison for life. So the answer to that question is yes. Most emphatically, yes. It is, and I want to go a step further. Once I have the experience, then everything else has came out of that. Has taken care of me. Please follow.
I think it's common, my experience is it's common for people to fall into a cycle of depending upon prison.
Okay.
And familiarity and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you have advice about trying to break that cycle
of dependence.
Yeah. And there is almost like a beauty about prison.
Yes. Yes. So let's go a little deeper. Let's open this up, okay? So I make sure I hear you correctly. So what you're saying, you make it a practice to try to depend. Explain it. Say it again.
No, not me.
Okay. Okay.
And I.
had a family situation where my almost entire family is made up of police officers and cons.
And cons?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost my entire family. I mean,
one or the other?
Yeah. Okay. And which is actually fairly common. And I notice, I would say, similar patterns on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And there's often it's easier to go back to prison than it is to face having to pay the rent.
Yes.
And there's a certain safety.
Yes, right.
And there's a certain I want to say a beauty that attracts.
Right.
Even though once the person's returned, it's like,
what did I do? Right. I experienced that number of times. Okay. Yeah. I know that place. Yeah.
And so my experience indirectly has been that prison is very good at reminding people what really matters and what's trivial in life.
Right.
But that, and what's really basic.
Right.
But there's like this problem in that it's just in a way almost too easy to return to it.
Yes.
Than face the more, in some sense, more complicated, in some sense, more trivial sorts of things that we tend to deal with outside of prison.
Well, hold it. What I experience. I'm always saying this. Let me talk about now. Let me talk about then. Okay. I now do not want to go back to prison. I am strong enough, I feel, and wise enough to face whatever it is out here I need to face and do whatever it takes to stay out here. You know, paying the bills, having a relationship, you know, whatever it takes, I'm willing to face that. Even though it's very difficult, extremely difficult for someone who spent half their lives in that environment. Because I believe if you're able to stay out here, there are so many opportunities for you to be successful at whatever it is you want to be successful at. When you go back to prison, then there's very little opportunity. Let's go back a few hundred years when I was hustling. I remember one time specifically I was doing real good. And it's in my book. I was doing great. I was making a lot of money. I was dressing well. My name was ringing through the streets. I had achieved a level of notoriety and fame in the hustling world as a player, as a hustler, a guy that knows how to survive out here on the streets as a player. I'm sitting in front of the club, going to go in. And I had this thought, I need to go back to jail. And immediately, this world started crumbling. I mean, days later, it started falling apart. Whether I was sensing it was going to fall apart, or whether I was ready for it to fall apart, or whether I brought it up on myself, the thing was, it started falling apart and I was back in jail. I said, oh no, this is not what I want. And so in the same time frame, I said, I want to be free. And so I tapped into this place of hustle or wisdom or whatever it is, and I was able to escape and get my freedom back. It's all the same time frame. I felt so good I was able to get my freedom back. And that is when I learned how to really start to appreciate freedom as opposed to incarceration. Because I got my freedom back. I said, okay, now I got it. I took it from myself. I saw the bars, jumped out the window, ran down the tracks, and got away.
You really did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was free for 4 years on the run, running from the FBI and everything. But I had got good on staying out there. You know, I said, I like it out here better than I like it in there. And so I can understand the mentality of a person or individuals that says, I'd rather be in jail than out here because I have to show up out here. In jail, you're taken care of. You got 3 hots in the cot, you're safe, you're secure. You don't have to worry about taking care of yourself. You don't have to worry about paying the bills. You don't have to worry about nothing. So it's really a cop out. And a lot of men and women that I worked with in county jail and prisons, I would see it in their face. I would see it in their stories that they wanted to be free, but they didn't want to pay the price of freedom. Like holding down a job at the bookstore and doing they didn't want to do that. You know, like keeping the bookstore open by, getting a loan and doing all the things it takes to keep the bookstore open. They didn't want to do those things. I said, well, start at McDonald's and work, but they didn't want to even start at McDonald's. They didn't want to even try. It was so terrifying to them because you have to face so many things inside of yourself that's going to keep coming up. Like you said, the ego is going to keep coming. Oh, you can't do this. Oh, you're no good. So pretty soon they just give up. They surrender. So I want to ask you a question. You say half your family's cons and half of them are police. Which one are you?
Oh, I'm an exception. I'm a teacher. Probably a little of
both. It feels to me like you must have had a karmic connection with Gangaji. How on earth did you get? How on earth did it come to pass that she visited the prison where you were?
Yeah, it was really quite amazing because I was in federal prison in Springfield, Missouri, and I was happy to be there because I was close to my family in Kansas City, Missouri, who was only 150 miles away, and I was back on a parole violation. Mm. Then one day I get a phone call, request to go see my counselor. I go see my counselor. He says, we're transferring you to Littleton, Colorado. And I had just seen on the news, well, they've been rioting up there. I said, oh, man, I ain't trying to go to no prison where they're rioting. And so I said, oh, man. But you really can't get out of it once they say you can get out of it. There's a way of doing it, but I didn't want to go through that. So I went back to the yard, and I told my friends I'm going to Littleton, Colorado. So the guy I had been meditating with, Feet Mall, he says, great. I know some people I can hook you up with up there who are Buddhists. They come into the prison so you can keep on doing your practice. I said, okay, then cool. And so I get there, and that's where I was in my state of depression, so I didn't really, I wasn't really trying to really get back into my practice. But once I got there and realized Gangaji had a group, a volunteer group that was coming in. And so I just got with those guys, about 5 or 6 of us, and just, you're right. And she has not really, she doesn't really do that work anymore. Mm-hmm. And at that time, she was excited about doing that kind of work, And so I just happened to be at the right place at the right time to receive this gift of freedom.
Did you say she traced her lineage back to Ramana Maharshi?
Well, that's what Papaji went to, was with Ramana,
And rather than Maharshi?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That is how...
I read something by him when I was really young, and it really opened my mind up. He's a good teacher.
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry.
No. There's a story about Papaji and Ramana. I think Papaji was looking for a teacher, and Ramana showed up on the road and said, "Hey, go see this guy over here." And so Papaji goes over there, and there he sees Ramana. He said, "Wait a minute, I just saw that guy on the road. This guy's a fake. He's hustling people to his satsangs." And he says, "This man hasn't left his place in years." And he immediately stopped. Mm. So, oh, okay.
It's a miracle.
Yes. Nothing is impossible for consciousness. It can clone itself 10,000 times, appear wherever we want to appear. It's just how much you want to believe is possible for things to happen. How much you can open your mind. Miss Roller Coaster Lady, how are you doing? How are you doing? You the roller coaster lady. Remember did you say you were doing like?
That was me.
Oh.
I've been switching rooms.
Are you joking? Well, how are you doing anyway?
I'm doing fine. I don't know what you're talking about.
Huh?
You know what you're talking about? Roller coaster lady. I don't get a roller coaster.
No, she says she does. Like this. So how are you doing? Anyway.
I'm doing okay.
Mm. Your name?
Janetta.
Where are you from?
My daughter.
Oh, mother and daughter. Oh, okay.
My dog is my grandson.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm. Yeah, I'm doing
fine. So your grandson. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Please give him my love. Mm-hmm. And I wish him well. Mm-hmm. It was great to have met him. Mm-hmm. And to be able to share my insights, my wisdom about how to survive in a very brutal environment. You know, how I survived all those years, I actually put on a mask. Mm-hmm. I put on this mask. I'm a very soft person. Up under him, I'm a very soft person. We all are. But I had to put this mask on in order to survive. Now that I'm out, now I'm having to pull this mask off. And sometimes it'll pop up in strange places. I could be shopping Whole Foods. All of a sudden, I'm looking like I look at somebody and like I've been, I'm ready to bite the head off. And I don't even know it because it's unconscious thinking or feeling come up, and I put the mask on, because whenever you're walking, I walk into a new environment. Whenever I was in all those years of hustling, when I would go into a prison, a new environment, I immediately like, okay, is this safe? How am I gonna survive here? You know, so let me puff myself up and put a mask on, like I'm ready to bite your head off. And really, I'm like, I just wanted to get. Can we all just get along? But that's not that type of environment, you know. So I had to adopt a persona that I am now deconstructing.
So do you go into prisons now talk to people and give stuff? Because I guess what I've been wondering about the whole time is the people in prison that don't maybe believe, I don't know if they all have a spiritual longing that's just really hidden, you know, if all people do, or if just some people, or... I guess I'm wondering why, you know, that repeated cycle of people who go kind of just end up staying in prison most of their lives. Is there something, is it just your presence? Because your presence does have an effect. Just a person's being, I know, has an effect on other people.
Mm-hmm.
But is there ever anything you can say to people that maybe, or you do you know if... any hints about what might kind of crack a person open or help them shift?
First of all, there has to, sometimes people just have a spontaneous awakening because we don't know, yes, what, it could be their karma, we don't know what's really going on deep inside of them. And but a lot of people that I work with one-on-one or individually in groups, a lot of them really didn't really, they didn't want to hear what I had to say, matter of fact. Yeah. Well, I mean, I went to one jail, and they actually laughed me out of the jail, and I quit going. The jail was saying, we don't want your type of preaching or teaching here. I was opening my heart, trying to share my wisdom. They're looking at me like, man, get out of here with this. Entertain us. Tell some jokes. Do a dance. Don't talk about God. And I left. I said, I'll never come back again. It just tore me apart. And Gangaji told me, she says, the work that you're doing, get ready for your heart to be broken over and over and over and over and over again. So I go in very, I don't go in as much as I used to. I used to go in almost every daggone day. Yeah. Now I don't go in as much because I realized it also was having an effect upon me. And I didn't know that until after 4 years into it, like, okay, this is, why am I not really wanting to be in this jail today? Why is it I don't really want to, want to hear another story anymore? And I knew then it was time for me to start backing up. So I have a volunteer, he goes into San Quentin. And I work with, right now I work in a high school with young kids. And I work one-on-one, I have better, effect with them. At least,
they're still open.
They're still open. Or they want to be open. Guys have been in prison 20, 30 years, 15 years. I mean, what I hear over and over and over is like, it's too hard. I don't want to change. This is too much work. So I want to do it, but it's too hard. I understand.
The price of freedom. There's a price to pay,
and they were not willing to pay the price.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am willing to pay the price. I enjoy being out here trying to figure out how, to pay the bills, how to, meditate, how to have a better relationship with my family, how to stay in relationship. I enjoy life out here, even though it's difficult and challenging. I enjoy
it. I've never experienced prison at all, and I don't think that there's any comparison for what I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
But, in high school, I was sent out on a wilderness trip for 4 months. And I found this space there. I didn't have to find food, but I did know, I knew how to build the shelter. I knew how to make fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I just cooked rice and lentils.
Mm-hmm.
And what I had been filling my consciousness with before is no longer there to influence me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I still feel like I need to go back, and my dad says, okay, wait, you're carrying your tent around in your heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have your shelter, check. You have your food, check. You have clothes, you're warm, check. Don't worry about anything else. You're taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to go back to the desert.
Is that your father saying it, or that you saying it?
The checkoff?
No. No, going back to the desk. Is that your father saying it? Or
I don't need to.
You don't.
That's
need to.
Me saying.
Okay, okay, okay. You don't need to go.
I want to go. I think about it, but when that comes up, I'm like, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Time to take a look around. What is really happening?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing happening. We're sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
You're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are no bills.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's dying here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Somebody's dying somewhere.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But we're creating our reality in this moment.
Right. Your name?
Raidat.
Who?
write that. Or Shreya. Shreya's easier.
Okay, you got a third choice for me?
I can come up with something.
Let's try it again. Rate that. Rate.
You should call me Shreya. You just call me Shreya.
Shreya.
Yeah.
Shreya.
Yeah.
Shreya. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I can handle Shreya.
I forget which one I introduce myself. Mm-hmm. I can't remember sometimes.
So y'all both from the same country or something like that?
No.
She's from here.
You from here? Okay.
I'm from San Francisco.
Oh, you from the city? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I'm staying with Shreya.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I guess there's a couple ways I could ask this. Mm-hmm. Part of me wants to ask if you had experiences in talking with counseling, teaching prisoners who have been sentenced to life.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me wants to ask if you just talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of me wants to ask if you have advice for someone like myself who occasionally visits someone who's he hasn't yet been sentenced, but he's currently serving and loving your sentence and facing another one that's more likely not going to be like. So, do you have any experiences about?
Yeah, I've talked to lifers. I've talked to people who's going into, all across the gamut. Matter of fact, I'm talking to my brother-in-law right now. He's facing maybe life in prison. So the advice I gave him, you know, was to, go within himself. Quit worrying about all the other things. And start studying. And face the fact, the reality of what you're doing, not in the study. I told him, study law books. Go understand how you got legally, you put yourself in prison, and see if you can find yourself, get yourself out through the law. But what came up as you was talking was for you just to really be present. Really be present. Now, what does that mean? That actually means for you feeling your heart and feeling his heart. Then you're actually doing a service. Bless you. You're actually doing a service. That is the best way. That's the universal way.
That can be very hard. That can be very difficult.
Thank you.
I mean, with anyone.
Right.
But, this person is my brother.
Right.
I mean, because there's times when he's conning himself, there's times when he's trying to get you hooked into things, there's times when he's in a good space.
When you are in your heart, you dropped all, okay, I ain't trying to fix him, I ain't trying to get him out of jail, I'm just going to be in my heart, I'm going to actually feel my heart, I'm going to let all the stories go, and I'm going to be in this moment, and I'm actually feel all my pain, first of all, feel all of your stories. Well, I want to get away, but just keep feeling. It'll calm down. The stories will calm down. And then you'll feel yourself. You'll be in your body. You'll feel the energy of your heart. You'll feel the spirit. And you keep on, then you'll feel this warmth or this fear. It might be this fear. Just keep feeling it. Then you'll hear all these stories. You'll stay centered in your heart. Because you're not trying to go off on this tangent. You're not trying to go off on this down this route. You're not trying to follow this into this path, because they're going to throw 1,000 different stories at you. But all you can do is just feel your heart and feel his heart and speak from there. Because you can't afford to get lost in his stories. You know, remember the stories, if you cuffs, it's the ego, his ego is running up the 10 billion miles an hour. So, but if you hang here and feel the energy of your body, of your heart, then just hold a space there for him. Because what you're doing, then you have him slowly vibrating at a slower level, so he can, for a few moments, can feel some peace. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. And part of me wants to say, but yeah.
Yeah, well, let's hear the but. Let's hear the but.
It's exhausting.
It's like when
we were younger, I used to go more frequently. But it's almost like I'm doing time right.
That's right.
And then as we get older, I go much less frequently.
That's right.
It's just so hard.
That's right.
It's at a point where if I see him once a year,
right,
it takes a month to recover.
That's right.
And there's also a part of me that feels guilty because it's like, right, I wish I could be a better brother.
Right.
And now he's facing life.
Our
father died while he's in jail. There was a time when I was like holding on to the ashes for him to come out of prison so we can, bury him.
Realize that's not happening now.
Now he's done something, so looks like he's not going to get out of prison. And it's almost like prison and prison and life. It sucks family in as well as the economy. There's a part of me just wants to give up. It's hard.
I didn't say it was easy. I'm just saying, in order for you to take care of yourself, first of all, is to really become anchored and centered in what you, in the peace that you know that you have experienced, and then to try to transmit as much of that as possible to him, regardless of his stories. So you say you're a teacher. So here's the opportunity, to teach love to your brother whenever you go, once a year, once every 20 years, whenever. I understand how traumatic it is after you leave, because you're never going to see him again out here with you. And so all those stories are coming at you. Now you're feeling your shame and your guilt and your worthlessness and all those things. Which is an opportunity for you again to stay centered in your heart. The work does not stop. So that would be my advice. And you're probably doing the best, like, I can't go every 6 months, I can't go every month, it's just too much. When I was in prison, I had a woman stuck by me for 10 years. And I had no idea what she went through, because there was nothing she could do to get me out of prison. And for 10 years, she came every month. We're not together anymore, but, it was just because I went back. She said, oh, no, I can't do this. I can't do another round of that, baby. Because I got out and went right back. She said, I can't do another round. Then my mother says, I'm done. Right. It comes to a point where the family says, I'm done. And once my mother said she was done, then I met Gangaji. My mother says, I give you over to the Jesus and to the Lord. And I think 2 or 3 years later, I met Gangaji. I come up, Mom, I'm in jail again. Could you send me $10, $5 so I buy me some soup and some cigarettes or whatever, And she said, Kennedale, I'm done. I hung the phone up. I said, well, I can't call collect that anymore. Maybe I call Shreya. And that's what I started doing. Then I started looking around. Can I call you? Or can I call you? Can I be my pen pal? You know, that's what I started. You know, I was still desperate for connection, for love, for, you know, somebody approval or support, anything. Thank you for that dream. Yeah. I really, really, really appreciate that dream.
Did you find a publisher?
That's where we are. Right now we have I wrote a book called The Last Hustle. It's a memoir about my life. And it took us a year to write it. I had a co-author, or editor rather. And we finally got it to an agent. And we just finished up, you know, proposal and all the stuff you go through to get a book prepared to go to these big publishers. And so my co-writer, she's so pushy, thank God. So she sent an email to the agent. Have you heard anything? Have you said anything? Do we need to do anything else? I looked at the email. I said, well. And I'm of the mindset that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. If it's not, it's not. I've done all I can do. She's done all she could do. But she won't let go. And that's good. That's perfect. And I'm not trying to call her off. I'm not saying, hey, don't say anything. I'm just saying that's what she needs to do. And maybe he might need that little nudge every now and then. Because I'm not the nudging type. You know, I mean, I'm pushy. I can be, you know, I can be a-hole at times, you know, but I feel on this project, I poured my heart out. I went through all kind of stuff after the book was done. Now, if it's going to get published, it's going to get published. If it's not, it's not. And then I come in and Amber said she had a dream about she was reading my book. And she told me the color of the book. So, and I really believe in dreams. And I really believe, you know, in people, other people receiving confirmation for you. And so if a book, once the book is published, of course, where would it be? It would be here at Many Rivers Bookstore, and she would be reading it. And I would be here with books to sell. And the book is about my life in Arkansas when I was raised as a young kid, and how I left Arkansas, went to Kansas City, Missouri, became a juvenile delinquent, went to prison, meeting my teacher Ganga G, and getting out and doing the spiritual work. And everybody has read the book, read the manuscript, love it. I mean, just love it. They said we did a great job. And the agent, check this out. The agent, Gandhiji was in New York about a year ago, and so she met this agent. And so she comes back and she gives us his email address and phone number and tells us to call him. So we contact him, talk to him, and he says, yes, sign a contract and I'll be your agent. He says, oh, by the way, Kenny, I was in Minneapolis at the same time you were there. Mm-hmm. And this was back in 1975, 74, 76. He said, while you were pimping, putting the people on, women on the streets, I was a social activist trying to get them off the streets. So that's my agent. I mean, we probably were this close. We probably looked at each other, you know. And like, you know, that's, you know, no chance, because, you know, I always say, you never know how close you come to someone before you finally meet them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we probably looked each other dead in the eye. Then 30 some years later, here we are working together to get this book published. He says, I have a personal interest in this book, because he was there. He knows. And the stories, a lot of stories centered around the Minneapolis hustling that scene, that time period. And so I said, all the agents in the universe. Here I get one that was in the world, in the streets at the same time with me, on the other side of the street. So, so I trust that, you know, the universe has a very unique sense of humor. So I trust that, you know, everything is going to work out just perfectly. Yes.
The ego is a prison. The ego is a prison?
Yeah, ask her. Ask her. I talked to her about this. She just described it real clearly. She said she woke up and she saw very clearly that the ego was here. And she, you were, how did you say it again? You said.
That I was just in bliss without the ego, and I was in that state of just, I didn't tell my story. And but then the ego came in and was afraid and like took it back. And I felt very burdened.
Yeah, you woke up, you didn't, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Oh, you're, boom. Yeah, so to answer your question, it is a prison, gosh, man, where do I go? Step out in this limb. I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to touch it. I let him. That's his subject. When you talking on the ego?
When are we talking? 2 weeks?
2 weeks. Come back 2 weeks and he can explain it, break it all the way down to you, okay? I'm not going to touch. But because I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a therapist, and what little knowledge I know about the ego is that, of course, we know there's the desire, wanting. I would say the id. Am I somewhere close to that? And the superego. And there's a, you know, you're following your desires, But then there's something, hey, you're not supposed to do that. You know, you're supposed to be doing this here. So there's this war between these two things. So you need a mediator. Mm-hmm. And the ego comes in, and that mediates, okay, then now you can have a little chocolate today. But yet you got to go to work tomorrow in order to pay for the chocolate. So there's a balance in there. So the ego is a mediator. Then pretty soon it gets puffed up because look what it did. Then there's a prison there. That's my rough, unprofessional description of how I look at that. Well, think about it. When we are able to clean ourselves up and we feeling good about it, I said, man, yeah, you know, puffed up. And that can become another prison.
It can, but it doesn't have to.
It doesn't. That's right.
If you make friends with it, and if,
that's right.
If you've also experienced the peace and let that speak, and then it can be a friendship.
That's right. That's right.
Because the ego needs to be led.
That's
it
right.
It needs to know it's not that, the leader.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you can have a choice, like which is what I felt. That seeing it so clearly I felt bigger than both. Witness.
Right. Now there you go.
If you grow your witness, your meditation,
that's
then
right.
You have choice.
There you go.
And you can choose the bliss.
There you go.
Cleared that up.
Yeah, cleared that one up.
And you can go, it's just a story.
That's right. Yeah.
There's nothing substantial, actually.
I happened to find a poem I wrote when I was 14. It was called All Alone, but it's about being in this prison palace, called it. Of the mind, where all these thoughts, and I like to read, and it can be kind of wonderful. And then sometimes you're able to have a contact with outside people, and I had a lot to learn about probably the heart and the body. One of the lines is, "Who need the limbs, the body, nothing at all? It's all the mind." Which, you know, but it was kind of interesting to find that and see. I'm not 14 years old anymore.
Right.
But prison palace, you know, in some ways. And I always think of prison Well, in astrology, prison is the 12th house, which is also monasteries.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you.
You know, anything, hospitals, things that are outside the, you know, hubbub of ordinary life.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an opportunity just in being set aside where there's maybe nothing but yourself to deal with. I don't know if people can escape themselves even in prison.
Well, when you said that, I wanted to say that what I discovered, what I'm seeing, is that prison is a form of a monastery.
Yes.
A retreat center. Because that's what it was. As soon as I go back to prison, I start studying spiritual material. I never learned how to grow flowers. I never learned how to make teas. I never learned how to make a bookshelf, but I was... Every book I could read on spirituality, I just read and read and read and read. I kept building up my spiritual self. And so it became a monastery to me. Then once I had my awakening experience, it was really a monastery. It was perfect. I would just sit there and just be meditating, totally at peace with everything. Seems like I met you before somewhere. Have I?
You think so?
Huh?
Maybe so in another life.
You look so familiar. Yeah. Just have one of those faces. How are you doing today, sir?
Good, thank you.
And your name?
Alan.
How are you doing? I'd like to hear your, let's see you say it, throw a little words of wisdom this way.
Well, I'm just remembering a little drawing of a bird. It's in a cage, and here's the bars, and it's looking out through the bars like it wants out. Mm. And there's no bars on the side. It's like it's free. It could just fly out. But it's focused on the bars. I don't know why that comes to mind right now.
That's a beautiful way of looking at it. Yeah, that's true. That's all of us.
Yeah.
And that's all of our story.
We carry our prisons with us.
Yes.
Michael said.
Yes.
I saw the same cartoon, I think, but it wasn't a bird. It was actually a person who was holding up the bars while he was...
There it is. I like that. That's even more correct. Like I want to be free. I want to be free. We'll drop the bars.
Well, there's an old Sufi story that says if you want to get out of the cage, you can't break the cage, you have to feed the bird. It's more idealistic.
What does that mean, feed the bird?
Well, if you're identifying with yourself as the bird, and the bird's in the cage, and you're saying, well, how? So you put all your energy into, like, how am I going to break through this cage, and the answer is you don't. You keep feeding the bird till it's so big that it breaks out.
And I can see that because, like I said, I was in prison. I kept feeding myself spiritual material till I was able to break out of it.
Well, then you had the guru come busy.
And the guru came in, and So I totally hear that. Totally feel that. Yes.
Something that I struggle with personally, and as an aside, I think this is something I share with my brother, and one of the things that kind of keeps me returning to him is while I have periods in my life and many moments that spiritual, I also regularly return to feeling, I want to use words like haunted.
What's the last word?
Haunted.
Haunted?
Yeah.
Haunted.
And I find myself frequently, and this is a bond I have with my brother, feeling like... and one of the things that I'm kind of responding to the cartoons of the bars. Right. Because my brother and I are both survivors of severe child abuse. And there's just this, it's like I go back and forth feeling like, well, you know, is it realistic to think that I can just kind of drop the bars and suddenly the ways in which I feel, you know, my life seems to be affected by that experience. Somehow that can go away.
Okay.
Or is it about not expecting it ever to go away?
Okay, okay, great. It's funny how you brought that up, and now we're talking about holding. What you're doing and why you came here is because you want to drop the bars. You actually want to drop the bars. But you have guilt, shame, you know, a thousand other stories that these bars represent. And so whenever you're ready to get out of prison, you have to just drop the bars. You can't save your brother. You can't change the life you have. You know, all that was had to happen, and for all of you, for you to realize that I have to be free. I have to let go of the bars. I have to be free. Our lives are set up to where we're moving toward waking up. So my question to you, give me your name again.
Michael.
Michael, is when are you going to drop the bars? When? When are you going to do it, Michael? Are you going to do it tomorrow? Are you going to do it tonight? Are you going to do it now?
My answer is, I thought I have, and then at times, then it seems as though it's not.
When you really, Michael, when you really drop the bars, you know. You're between the police. And you're between, oh, this is beautiful. You're between the id and the superego. And you're probably ego, you know, trying to hold this shit together. But you have to go to another place. Realize and get your sustenance, to get your food, to get your guidance, to get your help. So drop the con and drop the police. And if you drop the con and you drop the police, what do you have?
I'm just there.
And how does that feel? And rest. And just rest. Just rest there. Thank you. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate each and every one of you coming out.
Thank you for coming to Many Rivers tonight. Mm. It was wonderful. Mm. So, many of you know the drill. We have a donation bowl here on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it, which we share with our speaker to further his work, and to help make this space available on a continuing basis for this sort of event. There are books you might consider looking at here over on this table to my right on your way out. And thank you so much for coming to Many Rivers. Come back sometime when you can actually see the books.